We'll be reading a verse from Third Canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Is there anybody here that's new? Okay. Here we go. While visiting, I've been reading from the Third Canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 9. And we're only like a quarter of the way or a third of the way through the chapter. It's a long chapter. And this is text 17, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. This morning we discussed Brahma's prayer, where he's indicating that the personality of Godhead, who is visible before him, is the root of material existence. From him, the entire creation comes, including the chief engineer of the universe, or chief sub-creator, like a subcontractor or something, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. They're deriving their power from the source of the material creation. And in the spiritual creation, similarly, the personality of Godhead is the source. So he's the root of the spiritual and the material realms. In part, we discussed that Brahma is praying in that way because he wants to not be forgetful of the fact that his ability to do his part, to his creation, do his duty, to his service, is derived from a superior source. So as true for Brahma, same for us. Each of us having some duty to do each day. This is at the beginning of his day. He has to recreate that portion of the universe that's been dissolved, partial devastation. He's praying for the potency, and he's praying for to do that, and he's praying for the remembrance of his position in relation to the Supreme Lord. Then, this evening's verse, the prayer to Lord Vishnu, is describing the unfortunate and foolish condition of those persons who don't take shelter of the personality of Godhead. They engage themselves instead in working in a fruitive way, working very hard to achieve material results and become entangled in the complexities of material existence and forget the goal of life. In one sense, the goal of life everybody has, that's we want to be happy. Universally, everybody wants to be happy. But the access to that real happiness is checked by that forgetfulness. So strive as they may, the difficult activities that they engage in, Brahma's, and he certainly knows, he's the creator of the place, so he knows. He knows the program. In the purport, Prabhupada is discussing the similarity between what Brahma is saying and what Prahlad Maharaj says to his father, Hiranyakashipu. And there are similar verses in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking to Arjuna. So we'll read the verse in purport. It starts, Loko vikarma niratak kushila pramatak. So, loko, people in general, vikarma. Karma, akarma, and vikarma. Vikarma, forbidden activities, or horrible activities. People in general engage in horrible activities. kushale pramatak. Pramatak means they become mad as a result of this. They become, their minds are bad, very disturbed. So, people in general all engage in foolish acts, not in the really beneficial activities enunciated directly by you for their guidance. As long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful, all their plans in the struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. I therefore offer my obeisances unto him who acts as eternal time. Maybe you can remember the Sanskrit lesson that I gave the other day, the Yavat Tavat lesson. Do you remember that one? Any of the youth remember that one? Yavat Tavat? We'll do it again, because it's in this verse. As long as, it's like cause and effect. As long as, it's like whenever you see smoke, there's fire. Yavat Tavat. You may not see the flames, but if you see a smoke, you know there's fire. You put your hand on the wall and you feel heat, there's an electrical fire inside. So you have to do something, because it could burst out in flames, at least like, you know, a short circuit problem. So cause and effect. Whereas this, so this. Cause and effect. So I'll recite the verse and maybe you remember the example. Yavat kriyas tavat idam manovai karmatma kamyena sharira bhanda. There's another Paravavas Tavat Abhoda Javto. Paravavas Tavat Abhoda Javto Yavandam Yigasta Atmatatvam. Yavat Kriyas Tavat. Anyway, I can't remember. The message is similar. As long as one is engaged in activities with fruitive intention, then one's mind becomes colored by karmatmakam yena sharira bandha, and one sees the world according to that coloration. If I have rose-colored glasses, then I kind of see the world rosy. And have yellow-colored glasses, then everything looks yellowy. And if the mind becomes colored with fruitive intention, then I'll see everything as an opportunity of how to exploit material nature and get something. And that fruitive intention mentality, sharira bandha, binds one to perpetual birth and death. Interminably, there's no guarantee that the living entity, all living entities will one day become liberated. No. One can perpetually, Krishna says directly in Bhagavad Gita, be cast into lower species of life by the forces of material energy if they maintain that spirit. So, that was Lord Rishabhdev instructing his sons. This is Brahma praying to Lord Vishnu. As long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful, all their plans in the struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. Not very encouraging. There's a verse in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna speaks the same. Mogasha, moga karma, no moga jnana, vicheta saha. What's the rest? Rakshasim Asarim Chaiva. So as long as one holds...
Is there a Bhagavad Gita around?
Have a Bhagavad Gita in the house? Have one in your bag? Look at this. Bhagavad Gita coming right up. Thank you. Mogasha, Asha. Asha means desire. Mogasha. Moga karma, no, their hopes, their work. Moga jnana, their knowledge. Vichetasaha, bewildered, baffled, stifled, blocked. Rakshasim Asurim Chaiva Prakritim Mohinim Shritaha. They become bewildered. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are defeated. Like, even before you get started, you're defeated. I saw a t-shirt the other day. If you can't win, don't play. This isn't, you can't even win, you can't even get started. Before you even get started, you lose. Your hopes, desires, your work, your knowledge, finished. By this position of taking shelter of demoniac views, and the demoniac views are taken, Krishna is saying here in Bhagavad Gita, because of this acceptance of the bodily conception of life and striving according to the bodily conception of life to achieve something tangible. You can't, because it's not tangible. It's impermanent. It's asat. Before you even get started. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, and he's not being very gentle here. People in general all engaged in senseless work. They are systematically unmindful of the real beneficial work, which is the devotional service of the Lord, technically called the Archana regulations. The Archana, Archana is deity worship, just like we had a deity ceremony the other day. Archana, regulations of deity worship. The Archana regulations are directly instructed by the Lord in the Narada Pancharatra and are strictly followed by the intelligent men who know well that the highest perfectional goal of life is to reach Lord Vishnu, who is the root of the tree called the cosmic manifestation. That's the previous verse. Vishnu is the root of the tree of the cosmic manifestation. Also in the Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita, such regulative activities are clearly mentioned. Foolish people do not know that their self-interest is in realization of Vishnu. The Bhagavatam 7:5-30-32. These are verses spoken by Prahlad Maharaj to his dear demoniac father, Hiranyakashipu. And those of you that have heard the Bhagavatam or Prabhupada speak on it, you'll know these verses. At least you'll have heard them many, many times, and you, in the future you'll hear them many, many, many more times. Matir na krishne paratak svatova Mitobi padyeta grahak pratanam adanta gobir vishatam tamishram punashpa nakcharvata charvananam. You've heard that one before. Punashpa nakcharvata char. It's even, the alliteration is nice. It means chewing the chewed. Again and again. Punat, punat. Charva to charva na nam. Nate vidu svarta gatim hi vishnum. They do not know that svarta gatim, sva arta gatim hi vishnum. The goal is certainly Vishnu. Durashaya ye bahir artha manina. Instead, they take shelter of this other program. Andanta yatan dair upaniyamanas te pisha tantriyam urudam nibandha naishamatis tavat ukramangrim sprishat yatartha pagamo yadartha mahiyasham pada rajo vishekam is kinchananam na nivranita yavat. Now, the translation that Prabhupada gives here is tailored, customized. And I'll read both, the ones that's in the Bhagavatam and the one that's here. Persons who are determined to totally rot in false material happiness cannot become Krishna-minded either by the instructions from teachers, by self-realization, or by parliamentary discussions. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest regions of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chewed. Because of their foolish activities, they are unaware that the ultimate goal of human life is to achieve Vishnu, the Lord of the cosmic manifestation, and so their struggle for existence is in the wrong direction of material civilization, which is under the external energy. They are led by similar foolish persons, just like one blind man is led by another blind man, and both fall in the ditch. Such foolish men cannot be attracted towards the activities of the Supreme Powerful, who is actually the neutralizing measure for their foolish activities, unless and until they have the good sense to be guided by the great souls who are completely free from material attachment. And the final paragraph. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asks everyone to give up all other occupational duties and absolutely engage in archana activities or in pleasing the Lord. What's that verse? Sarva dharma prityaja. I'm hearing a cacophony of this verse. It's a very popular verse. You know the Sanskrit? Can you say it? Moksha yishyami ma suchaha. That's an important part. Ma suchaha. Ma means do not, and suchaha is worry. You've heard people say that before, right? Don't worry. Ma suchaha. The other verse? Okay, your voice is soft, but you know the verse. Here's the way, again, how Prabhupada paraphrases the verse. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asks everyone to give up all other occupational duties and absolutely engage in archana activities or pleasing the Lord. But almost no one is attracted to such archana activity. Everyone, more or less, is attracted by activities which are conditions of rebellion against the Supreme Lord. The systems of jnana and yoga are also indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. There is no auspicious activity except archana of the Lord. Jnana and yoga are sometimes accepted within the purview of archana when the ultimate aim is Vishnu and not otherwise. The conclusion is that only the devotees of the Lord are bona fide human beings. I told you it wasn't mild. Being eligible for salvation, others are vainly struggling for existence without actual benefit. Now, the overall picture is that Brahma, he's in anxiety because he has to create this place that's like he's describing. It's his duty, but he sees the problem connected with this place that he has created. Tomorrow's Ekadasi. Do you know the Ekadasi story? Why is Ekadasi so special? Here's the description from the Puranas. After Lord Brahma completed the creation, he stepped back, considered how did it come out. You know, like you cook some sabji, or you make a nice drawing like you were doing before, or you know, you do something, you do a project at work, or you write a homework assignment, something, you do something and you step back to see how did it come out. And when he saw how the creation came out, so much suffering living entities are going to have to endure in this created realm. Vishnu, Vishnu, please do something to make this not such a terrible suffering condition. What can be done to relieve the people of all this suffering condition that they're going to have to endure? So Lord Vishnu was very pleased with the compassion of Lord Brahma. He said, I have just the thing. I'll give my benediction that on this 11th day of the waxing and 11th day of the waning moon, there will be this very special day. Ekadashi will be so special that it will be filled with spiritual potencies, that if one observes Ekadashi Vrata very nicely, then they'll be relieved of volumes of sinful reaction, and their transcendental love for the personality of Godhead will awaken very easily. Also, Brahma was very happy. At least 2 days out of each month, he can get completely relieved of all those unfortunate circumstances. But then Papa Purush, sin personified, he started whining and complaining. Look what you've done. You've created me. You created this world. And you've given me, what's going to happen to me on Ekadasi day? I'm finished. I have no existence. You can't put me out of existence. You created me. So Lord Vishnu said, very well, for those who take shelter in beans and grains on Ekadasi day, and those that eat beans and grains, they will ingest volumes of sinful reactions. So on Ekadasi day, stay away from beans and grains. Proper Purush might give you a little surprise. So on Ekadasi is an auspicious day. Prabhupada was very surprised and even chuckled when he the devotees were thinking, are we chanting extra rounds and observing our fasting because it's an inauspicious day and we want to stay away from inauspicious activity? No. The other opposite, it's very auspicious day. Very auspicious day. There are certain days in our Vaishnava calendar, by observing them, they have special potency for carrying us further, an amplified effect from whatever devotional activities we perform. So therefore, in general, Ekadasi is diminish those activities that are related to the maintenance of the body, diminish eating and sleeping, and increase hearing and chanting, especially chanting the holy name and reading of scripture. So a little warm up for tomorrow's Ekadasi observance. And it's good to have some personal vrata that you do, that on Ekadasi days, something, either you're diminishing something or increasing something or both, to take advantage of that auspicious day. So Brahma is very concerned about this circumstance of misfortune, that living entities have a general tendency towards in the material world. But it's a place of forgetfulness. Persons come here because they choose to turn their attention away from the Supreme Lord. And when you turn your attention away from light, and you turn your back on the light, you see shadow. So this is the shadow or reflection only of the spiritual realm. And the reflection of reality has no substance. The reflection of an object has no substance. How much water is there in a reflection of a glass of water? How much can your thirst be quenched by a reflection of a glass of water? It can't be. The happiness that one wants, whether it's on whatever level, happiness individually, happiness for the family, happiness for society, happiness for humanity, happiness for whatever it is, that's a reflection of the spiritual reality. Happiness isn't going to come in whatever combination you try to arrange things. It's just the nature. And so I'm going to go through a little more slowly the teaching of Prahlad. The circumstance in the fifth chapter of the seventh canto is Prahlad Maharaj is in the school of Shanda and Amarka. And Shanda and Amarka are the two sons of... Was their father? You know the whole story. Do you know the verse too? No? Shukracharya is the priest of the Daityas. And so his two sons are the heads of the school. And Hiranyakashipu and the other members of the Kshatriya families, they placed their sons in the care of these brahmanas to train them. And Hiranyakashipu was really, you know, busy with conquering and torturing people, so he didn't take much time to spend with his son. So one day he sat on the royal throne, had his son come and sit on his lap, and said, just like, you know, parents might do, ask their son or daughter, what are you learning in school? Tell me, what's the best thing? The best thing that you've learned in school? And Prahlad Maharaj says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. Vishnu worship is the best thing I've learned. Hiranyakashipu pushed him off his lap and turned to Sanda and Amarka and blasted them. What have you done? You've corrupted my son. You've taught him devotional service to Vishnu. I'll have your head. We don't know where he learned these things. He's a spontaneous devotee. They say that. It's just spontaneously he's like this. Please don't speak like this to a Brahmin. It's not nice. We didn't do this. So when Hiranyakashipu received this reply from the teacher, he again addressed his son Prahlad, saying, "You rascal." Nice way to address your son, right? "Most fallen of our family, if you have not received this education from your teachers, where have you gotten it?" Now, we know where he got it. But he doesn't tell him, "Narada Muni told me." He doesn't say that. He doesn't say that. Basically, he says, "Don't worry, Father. You'll never understand these things. Matir na Krishne. You'll never become Krishna conscious. Never have Krishna mindfulness," as Prabhupada is saying. Krishna mati. Krishna mindfulness. Matir na Krishne. Paratak svatova. Vitobi Bhadyita Grahakvatanam. For those who are Griha Vrata, those who are deeply attached to the bodily conception of life, and live their life that way, trying to enjoy material happiness in that situation, in materialistic family life, such a person, of their own effort, by the help of others, or the combination of the two. Or in the translation, he says, in a parliamentary assembly, like a lot of people trying to like help you, and let's have a discussion about how to get self-realization. But you hold on to the material conception of life and it's not going to happen. It won't happen. Something may happen, but awakening of spiritual consciousness won't happen. Whatever is arrived at by such a process, a group decision of how to have spiritual realization, it won't happen. Their inclination towards Krishna is never aroused. Rather, they're making progress towards hellish conditions of life and their businesses, chewing the chewed. It's like taking gum. That's too fond of gum. But if someone chews gum, and like, or maybe a better example is sugar cane that's been like put through the grinder so many times. And you go and take that piece of what was sugar cane, and it's like straw. There's nothing sweet, there's nothing juicy about it. It's awful. Because the juice has already been taken. So this chewing the chewed, and the business of material existence is simply that. Whatever it is that human life is trying to do, another phrase that Prabhupada uses is old wine in new bottles. That's not so common, but like show bottle, like put something in the window and it looks like it's something nice, but it's just colored glass and some water, and there's nothing of real value inside. The material, the show of material happiness or the allure of material happiness turns out to be empty, insubstantial. And in fact, a cause of misery. I'm going through these slowly because these are instructions that not only in this particular purport, but again and again, Prabhupada would refer to for instructions. He's speaking very boldly to his father. His father is thus like flips out when he speaks like this to him. But he's fearless and he's just speaking it as it is. Nate vidu svartakatim hi Vishnu. Sva artha, one's own self-interest. So persons in general don't know what their real self-interest is. Then he states what it is. It's Vishnu. That's what angered him before. Shravanam Kirtanam Hiranyakashipu would be fine. But Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, that's a problem. Materialists are happy to hear persons singing and praising their glories. And they're not so happy singing and praising the glories of the personality of Godhead, materialistic persons or Hiranyakashipu-like persons, Grihavrata-like persons. So such persons don't know that the goal, the real self-interest in life is Vishnu. Durashaya, being ambitious to enjoy this material world. Bahir artha maninas. Artha is wealth or value. Bahir artha maninas. They think that happiness is in achieving, you know, getting possession and control so they can enjoy things. Their life is obsessed with accumulation of things, which represent success and so-called happiness. But by that ambition to acquire things and have that standard for success and happiness, they're losing the real value of life, the real happiness of life. And we see it. Statistics tell us that suicide rate is highest amongst the wealthiest sector of society. Because those that are not there yet, they still have some hope. Maybe by getting to the top of the pile, I can enjoy. But those that are at the top of the pile, they realize there's no enjoyment. And it's very nasty. Competition to get there was very nasty. It's like your expression, the stabby in the back program, to get to the top. Step on somebody. The whole thing. And the atmosphere is... The process of getting there is very unpleasant. The circumstances there, it doesn't match one's expectations. And so there's great disappointment. Badri Narayan was telling this one story in his hilarious Bhagavatam class in Mayapur. The story is there's a farmer who spent his whole growing season tilling his field and working very hard and growing his products in his garden. Then at harvest season, after that long labor, he put all of his harvest into an ox cart and took his ox cart into the marketplace. And he saw there in the marketplace there was a merchant who was sitting there in his rocking chair, sipping lemonade, and he's thinking, there is happiness. If only I could be in that situation, then I would be happy. And the merchant, after receiving the goods and paying the money, he was thinking, it's becoming tax time because it comes right after harvest time, so I'm going to have to go to the king and pay my taxes. So he's going to the king to pay his taxes. He sees the king sitting in this big palatial facility and just sitting there receiving taxes from everybody. So he's thinking, that I would really like to have that facility of being a king and enjoy in this way. And the king is thinking, because I now would have just received all the taxes. There's all the enemies, and there's so many eager people to take from me and whatever they can get, and by cheating, conniving means, and so much skullduggery in the royal palace. Looking out the window, he sees the farmer tilling his fields, thinking, there is a peaceful, happy life. And so it is in the material world, that the happiness is on the other side of the fence. The grass is greener on the other side of the fence, one is thinking like that. Because the happiness in the moment is never experienced. It's always in the next moment. By arranging this and that, then happiness will come, chasing the carrot. Even when the senses come in contact with the sense object, yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. And so, rightly so, Krishna says, if one is overly obsessed with fruitive activity, even before they begin their undertakings of work or knowledge, their desires, it's taken from them before they even begin. It's ephemeral. It's insubstantial. And that's the lesson. You know, it's maybe it sounds like harsh talk and that kind of, why is Maharaj speaking like that? Why is Krishna speaking like that? Why is Lord Brahma speaking like that? Why is Prahlad speaking like that? Why is there this symphony of the same message? Why are so many people speaking like that? It's for our benefit, so that we don't mistakenly go chasing the carrot or indulge in foolishness. And in that foolishness, matir na krishne parataksva, that awakening of our dormant God consciousness will never take place. Yavat kriyas tavat idam manovai. There's the verse. Yavat kriyas, as long as there is fruitive intention, tavat, then as a result, idam manovai karmatmakam yera sharira bandha. One's mind will be colored, tainted, contaminated, polluted, and life after life, idam manovai karmatmakam yena sharira bandha, will be perpetually in this situation of bondage. That's the program. You know, it's not what you see advertised in commercials or newspapers or television or magazines or publications. It's come and enjoy, come and enjoy. I remember Prabhupada's statement. It was a young brahmachari hearing Prabhupada speak this way. He said, this is Maya. Maya is, he made reference to in Homer's Iliad. There's a, those of you, you might have to read. Have you had to read it? You read part of it. One of the personalities or one of the characters in Homer's Iliad is, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but Siren, a female figure, and she's beckoning. And this is Maya, for at least Prabhupada's description. He said, you know, in Homer, there's this figure that she's beckoning, saying, come and enjoy me. Come and enjoy me. This is Maya. Come and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. This is the nature of it appears happiness in the mode of passion appears to be very nice, and later it turns out to be like poison. Happiness in the mode of ignorance is poison in the beginning and in the end. Like intoxication, alcohol, poison in the beginning and poison in the end. Happiness in the mode of goodness appears in the beginning to be very bitter. In the end it appears very sweet. So the austerity of living one's life in the quality of goodness to a sense gratifier looks like, oh, what do you guys do for fun? Something like that. But the happiness that can be derived from spiritual life is so unique, unlike anything of this world. I'll just end with this little description. Every year in Chicago, just like in Kitanagara, we hold retreats. So once a year in Chicago, there's a big public event called Taste of Chicago. And it's held in Grand Park downtown. They have a big fountain and like big park. And so what they have, it's like a traditional event, the largest public event in Chicago. It lasts for a week, 4th of July weekend. All the restaurant people pay, enormous amounts of money to have little booths, and people come and taste the restaurants just coming to one place. It's like, kind of a carnival atmosphere. Balloons and, the whole thing. So I always wanted to have, something that we could do on the Taste of Chicago so we could have a nice experience. So we tried different things and ended up with an event. We started calling it Festival of the Holy Name. So, and Badahari Prabhu came from Florida, not just he has a wonderful voice, but his Krishna consciousness is as wonderful as his voice is. Very inspiring devotee. And he's engaging the people who come in kirtan. They have the youth prepare for ahead of time, and they do different presentations on the holy name. Like one time the youth group did the prayers of Queen Kunti. Good. They made a PowerPoint presentation, showing some picture, and then one of the devotees, it was a high school concert violinist, I don't know what they call it, Chicago Youth Philharmonic, and she's a viola player. So she orchestrated how to sing the different instruments and how to sing and how to have instrumentation to accompany the prayers of Queen Kunti. And it was really nice. She had Rajiv Kattar play the flute, a few notes, boop, 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 boop. And then that was the melody that they followed, and then that was the melody that they sang, and the other instruments, violin and viola and harmonium and different instruments. It's very, so like that kind of thing. Different ways of featuring the holy name. Different ways of featuring the holy name. And then we have preparation for a 32-round day and then 32-round day. And then sharing, and then people go home. And it's a very nice experience. So we had the 32-round day one time in our suburban property, because there's the Chicago Temple is downtown, right in the armpit of Chicago, and the suburban property is a little further away. It's nice, has some landscaping and nice facility. So at the end of that 32-round day, we had some sharing. And one of the persons that I had never seen before, but he came to the event, he said, I'm from St. Louis, and the 4th of July, a friend said, why don't you come with me to the beach, 4th of July? It's really hot, let's go to the beach. I said, yeah, let's go to the beach, it's too hot. So then one of my co-workers, his name is Lal, he said, why don't you come with me to the Festival of the Holy Name? I said, Festival of the Holy Name? What's that? And I've never experienced anything. I've been to the beach before, but I've never been to the festival of the holy name. So, yeah, I'll go check it out. It was like, that was his level of commitment. I'll go check it out. And I came here and I saw so many people so sincere and so absorbed in this chanting thing. I never had beads in my hand. I never had, don't know how to use them. And I was like, wow, the energy is really good. Let me jump in the pool and see what it's like. And I chanted 32 rounds. And it was like, wow, I've never had an experience like that in my life. I'm really glad I didn't go to the beach. Now I have, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when I go back to St. Louis, but like, this was really good. It was like, it was amazing. And other similar, you know, he didn't even know exactly what his, what spiritual expectation was. It was just like a different experience. Something little, you know, out of the box, extraordinary. But in the association of like-minded persons, he got carried to a very joyful place. So, the message that Lord Brahma is speaking, the message that Prahlad Maharaj is speaking, the message that Krishna is speaking is not... It's a strong message. But it's protective, especially it permits one to not just go down the path of material sense enjoyment and think that's all there is. There is another alternative, and the other alternative can bring us to a very wonderful Krishnamati place, a very Krishna conscious place. And Brahma and Prahlad Maharaj and Krishna want us to have that experience. So we need to know the distinction between this and that, the material and spiritual side of things. And then we can make a choice. Okay. Hare Krishna. I hope I haven't overwhelmed you with Srimad Bhagavatam verses, but it's almost over. For me, it's nice. I like Srimad Bhagavatam very much. If you take Srimad Bhagavatam and read it regularly, something starts to happen. Besides purification, it's very much like being in the Holy Dham, where in the Holy Dham you can't exactly understand what's going on, but something's going on. There's some spiritualizing, some energizing, some purification that's going on just by being in the Holy Dham. And by reading Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, it grows inside you. It transforms your heart and how you feel, how you see the world, how you experience life. It's just like it's very mystical. It's just a book, in one sense, you know, paper and ink and binding and some color. But it's more than that. It's transcendental vibration, especially meant for this age of Kali, to restore our spiritual consciousness in this very difficult age of Kali. So by reading it regularly, you can easily become attached to it. I've become attached to it. I think that's a good attachment. That detachment can replace the other kind. Any questions or comments?
Maharaj, in the lecture that Krishna say that people who are inquisitive about, like, who are looking for, who are in search of knowledge about absolute truth, and who are inquisitive about the purpose of life, and who are, like, kind of disturbed or looking for wealth, they come to Krishna. But atheists also are kind of like...
He says pious people that have those concerns will do that. Chatra vidha bhajante mam jana sukritin arjana. Sukriti people do that.
So atheists, inquisitiveness is divide of like
land. They do something else. You missed one little word. Okay. Anything else? Yes?
This is following up with what I had this morning, your instructions plus today's class. So I'm just thinking, got the essence that material life is eluding, you know, like it's waiting to push you, kick you back. But if you pursue going towards that path, I somehow feel there is a sort of complacency which kicks in, because we feel like, okay, everything is
comfortable,
and then, you know, Krishna will take care and do it. Slowly I'm feeling that sort of complacency coming in my work life too. I'm just trying to understand whether is it, how do I pursue this? Is it a good way or a bad way?
No. Not good. So what to do? There's two things. One is understand what's happening and, you know, be more attentive. And the other is don't do that and you'll suffer. And then you'll do something. So the first one is much better. Because we don't like to suffer, but if, you know, that will come in the course of time because it means inviting the material energy again. Material energy moves in and we suffer. We don't like to suffer, so then we pay attention again. So, like this question that he raised, you know, one of the impetuses for pious people is when suffering comes, they turn to God. When the suffering is mitigated, they relax, that turning to God tendency. Like a really vivid example of that was in New York after 9/11. Boy, did everybody get religious. Like, mega religious, publicly mega religious. It was intense. And every street corner they had shrines, really, literally, you know, like with the light changing thing, walk, don't walk. They set up little shrines, and they waited instead of like crossing when the car stopped. They waited till it turned green, because they were praying. And then there was like a public gathering place, Union Square, and 14th Street, because they didn't allow anyone to go below Canal Street. Thus, they had a pass that said they lived down there, because they just like it was like quarantined. So it was like people were really serious about God. It lasted about a month and a half or two, and then like it faded and it was business as usual again, because their sense of safety was shattered, smashed, a little bubble burst. We're not safe. But complacency. So that's one example, but it's just nature. So, knowing that that's a tendency, those four types of impetuses for pious people to take shelter of Krishna help one get started, but to continue beyond those impetuses, either they just do their reruns, you know, we suffer and then we take shelter, and then the suffering mitigates, and we become complacent, and then we suffer, and so we take shelter. And so, to break that cycle of material impetus, at a certain point, it's needed taking shelter for a different reason, consciously taking shelter for a different reason. And the different reason is, I'm Krishna's eternal servant. It's who I am. It's the purpose of this human form of life. It's what the instruction manual says, how this human form of life is to be used. The Creator gave a manual, Bhagavad Gita, how to use this human form of life. And so on that basis, I worship Krishna, not, you know, the other ones, the initial four. That's required in order to overcome complacency. What's going on over here? Everything's all right? Okay. Anything else? Yes?
It might sound like a basic question, but I'm like...
Basic questions are fine.
So this is one of the first classes I've ever attended.
Oh, really?
So I'm just curious to know, like, you told, like, if you start reading Bhagavad Gita every day and get attached to it, you feel a lot of change in your life, right?
Yes.
So what kind of changes you feel? And I mean, I'm a person who haven't experienced it. I'm just curious to know, like, how you feel. And
well, let me quote the words of someone who, like you, was attending a Bhakti Vriksha gathering. And I was visiting a Bhakti Vriksha gathering, and he had been there for, well, we did sharing at the beginning. And he said, I want to share. He, like, you know, his hand was up first. He said, I've been coming for, as a young man, I read Bhagavad Gita many times. And I can honestly say that I never really understood it. But I knew it was a pious thing to do, so I continued reading Bhagavad Gita. And then I came over here to America. And, you know, I found out this little gathering and they're studying Bhagavad Gita. I thought, okay, it's a pious thing to do. I'll read Bhagavad Gita. But in the course of discussing Bhagavad Gita in the association of other like-minded persons, guided by a nice facilitator here, you know, here's what's happening in my life. So here's the answer to your question. He said, I'm feeling a contentment inside me that I've never experienced before. I knew it was like, that's probably possible, but I really wouldn't have been able to explain it to anybody because I'd never experienced it. Just like, I wasn't like hoping that would happen and therefore I'm imagining that it's going to happen. It just started to happen. And, you know, I'm finding friendships with people that I haven't known my whole life, but just in the last, you know, couple of months, and I feel really close to all these people. And, you know, even in the workplace, my anger is subsiding. It used to be, you know, that, he said, I'm not like a really flipped out angry person. I'm not like that. But things would happen, and like, you know, I get angry. But now it just doesn't happen. And instead, I'm thinking, okay, how can I perform the work in such a way that the task will get done? And I'm remaining calm, and it's like surprising me. And all I can say is all this is happening just from this nice association of reading Bhagavad Gita. I said, wow, that's like a great advertisement. But it was very genuine. It wasn't intended for anything other than just like a genuine sharing of his appreciation.
So it's like the way you perceive the life changes?
Yes. What's happening inside and how the outside is affecting you. You see in a more spiritual way. I mean, it grows specifically to see Krishna within all things, but he didn't describe like that. At the beginning, it's just you feel a spiritual strength, a spiritual purity, a spiritual wellness. that's very energizing and illuminating in the mind. Your interactions with people become different because of that. And you know, the faults, the struggles with lust, anger, greed, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja, it's taken care of in a natural, very natural way.
So how is it different from meditation?
Well, it is a meditation. It's meditation upon Krishna. It's not a meditation upon, you know, a candle flame, or meditation upon a blank wall, or a mandala. It's meditation upon Krishna, especially through the sound of his name, mantra meditation, and the sound of his words. But the attention, chaita, it's one of the 24 elements, is becoming purified. Consciousness is going to the Supreme. Attention is going to the Supreme. And as the Supreme pure, I become pure. It's not just focus of the mind. It's focus of the mind. But the mind becomes purified. And so that one can see and experience spiritually. You can start to see as Krishna sees through the eyes of Bhagavad Gita. You don't become Krishna, but you can see as Krishna sees. And that gives a detachment through that knowledge. We were discussing this. When there's attachment, you can't see things properly. Now, supposing, you know how that goes. You have a friend, and they're like, you know, really wound up over something, and it's not a big something. You're their friend. Say, hey, man, you know, it's not so bad. So what do you... Because they're attached. So they're feeling, and they're not seeing properly. And their actions and behaviors are unbecoming because they're attached. So it through that knowledge, it gives detachment. And then you can see things properly, you can act properly according to the circumstance. You get intelligence from it's the whole other experience. It helps increase the quality of goodness, but it carries you beyond into the spiritual realm. Diminishes the influence of passion and ignorance, increases the quality of goodness, and through that transition place of goodness, transcendence, you can tangibly feel it. You can feel energized and be inspired to go further and further. Naturally so. Okay, maybe that's a good place to end. Well, okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Yeah.